welcome to Backlog Dialogues, the podcast that digs you out of your backlog before it buries you. Joining me, as always, are the two friends who betrayed me, and thus I betrayed them.
We didn't betray you at all, John.
I mean, I kill you, you kill me. Yes, Hinamizawa.
We're a happy family.
Not recognizing that one, huh?
No.
No?
It's the Image rap song between Oishi and Keiichi.
What?
I kill you, you kill me. Yes, Hinamizawa.
What, really? That's a thing?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. When they cry is weird.
As it says, it's Hoshi Sachiro and Jeff Rubin, so.
This week we are doing what we were calling a Godcast. It is mostly just going over the all-cast review session at the end of Onikakushi, as well as talk about the adaptations and other things. Just sort of like a rundown of everything. Just kind of like the completion episodes we used to do. Yeah.
But there's a fair warning. There is going to be a breakpoint in this episode because, well, to talk about this properly, we need to go past those who are working directly.
Yes. We want to talk about things in a much more broad sense. And unfortunately, that means that we will have to get into spoilers at some point. But we will kick you out before we get into that if you are a new listener.
When you hit the first ending, you're done.
Yes.
Yes. We really implore you to only go past the spoiler klaxon if you have already read all of When They Cry.
Yes. Be up to date, please. Okie dokie. Without further ado, let's go get into that all cast review session.
As someone who came to the visual novel last and after the other works, this one really surprised me.
Really? I mean, it is pretty fun. So let's put this in context here. I'm pretty sure what he's specifically riffing on is a thing from Tsukihime, Teach Me, CL Sensei.
Which then gets turned into the Tiger Dojo when you get to Fates.
Yeah, exactly. In the Kinoko Nasu written Nasu Verse series, at the end of every bad route, you would get this little ending explaining what you did wrong, a little comedic out of character thing that kind of like defuses everything. It's
like a couple of characters come out, say what you did wrong, have a weird little sketch about the shit that just happened.
And this is kind of that, but on a much bigger scale because the entire cast comes out to talk about it at the weird diner for some reason.
All the characters together, except Keiichi, because as they say explicitly, he doesn't have a character model.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They lampshade right. That a little bit.
Yep.
As this has all been from his viewpoint, he's never popped up to speak.
Yeah, yeah. They all start talking about it and they treat it like we just read was a big mystery. The key point is if it is a human culprit or a curse.
Basically, even if you don't know the context of this whole thing from Tsukihime or Fate, it becomes pretty clear that this is the actors are coming out to talk to you after a play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he's dead, they're talking about how Keiichi's busy with the next episode.
That's weird.
So there's kind of a pair of themes going on. Like the argument is the supernatural or the human culprits.
Yes.
Now, it goes through a few different details. Like there's a discussion how theoretically, if they're even it looks supernatural, could be a human culprit deliberately imitating like the curse for whatever benefit it might be.
That honestly was the most compelling thing to me when I first read it. I had gone back and forth a few times, even just during this first chapter of supernatural versus human culprit.
Okay.
All the characters are there. Like, all the girls are there, along with Tomotaki and Oishi. Mm-hmm.
And they basically just have a big old discussion where they split down the middle. Cue Danganronpa.
Yeah, I was laughing. It's growing.
Scrum.
What does Monokuma say before he does split? The split decision?
Decision.
Hold on.
We're now going to go to the morphonomical trial grounds.
Yes. No, we can't make that reference yet. Give us money on our Patreon and we'll do a Danganronpa bonus season.
We'll set up the Patreon then.
Oh, yes, we should do that.
Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So to break it down, like Tomotake, Mio, and Erika all believe in human for different reasons. Like Tomotake's clearly a skeptic. Mio just sees that people could be tricky on plans. And Rika thinks that, oh, yeah, Shiro-sama could not be as evil as whoever was causing this death.
Yeah, she explicitly says, I don't believe that a god that does this to people would be worthy of worship. So Oyashiro-sama didn't do it.
I think Oishio-sama is a kind god. I think it was also part of it.
Yeah, I think that's like the key thing that opens up her reasoning is just like, what are you doing with my faith? Stop talking about it that way.
On the other hand, Rena, as a true believer, immediately runs at the opportunity to see like a believe her god. She's definitely on board with it being the god explanation. I can't remember what brings Satoko and Oishi in.
Satoko doesn't want to believe that her friends could be that evil and fooling her.
Right, right.
Oishi Nairhan, I just don't know.
Oishi is kind of interesting because the actor is going against the character.
You always wonder, like, is he mad that he can't solve it, so it must be a demon?
That could be it. But then Keiichi is called to be the tiebreaker.
He says, I think it's everything.
Yeah, he thinks it's both.
Both. Because everybody's picking on me.
Yeah. Yep.
Clearly, this is a work between the reverse vampires, the Illuminati, and the Outer Space to make my life hell.
Oh, no.
So, at the end, they explicitly state that Keiichi is studying the script for next time. And when I first read this, I'm like, wait, why is that? He's dead, isn't he? Are we going to have some kind of prequel in the next one?
Lots of flashbacks. This is going to be about our little girl pair trying to solve the mystery.
Oh, yeah, maybe. So let's talk a bit about our first reactions to the full story. Off the cuff. So it's been, I want to say, 17 years, 16 years since I watched Higurashi the first time.
And my voice is getting higher and higher.
Yeah, haha. Thank you. No.
Mickey Mouse reacts to Higurashi when they cry.
So anyway, but I can say this. When I first watched the anime, I did not think of it as a mystery story. I was completely invested in it as a horror story. Because, again, it was one of the first pieces of media I ever seen that actually scared the shit out of me. Like, deep under-the-skin dread is all I remember feeling about this show. And I'm like, I like that this feeling. Why has nothing else ever given me this? I'm going to watch more.
As I watch it, John's prompting, I'm pretty sure with him watching along online.
Yes.
I give my experience of it being in a dark summer evening all alone, watching the first arc all at once.
Yeah, that's
I definitely was. I was definitely haunted by it. Like, I really felt the isolation aspect. The anime went all in that part of the horror.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, the VN goes pretty heavy on that, too. But I had John around when I was experiencing it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I had John there in spirit, which I think is worse.
I'm haunting you.
I was actually very scared when I was reading the VN. I mean, there were a lot of parts that just filled me with dread. John can probably vouch for how unnerved I was by a lot of these things.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because, honestly, I often stay away from these sorts of settings for stories that I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very glad that John kept on me to read this thing because it has ended up being one of my favorite stories. But I'm really surprised at how well it does at building that sense of dread and isolation. And a lot of it is, in fact, just Keiichi's mindset that you get into when you read the VN. It's really effective. And for me, I think a lot of it was the fact that Ryukishi is very good at making you imagine the worst thing without having the image there in front of you.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. Like, because the visual novel format in this is very limited in how it does things, unless you're playing the console sprites and have some CGs every now and then, most of the time it's just things being described to you without being shown to you and letting you fill in a lot of the gaps. And like that empty space for your mind to go free is where a lot of the real horror in Higurashi, the visual novel, lies.
So I think we've mentioned slightly, but just to emphasize, there's not really any jump scares in Higurashi and there's no gory images. All of the violence and gore is conveyed in words.
Well, there's some blood splatter.
Yeah. Not to mention, the anime not so kind to you on that.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit.
I would argue Rena screaming in your face is a jump no matter where it comes from.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not that bad with the original sprites. It's just the console version that kind of makes it a bit over the top.
Yeah, when that sprite zoomed in, the eyes were blank. I still jumped, even though I knew it was
coming
in that first conversation.
The console version plays around with that kind of stuff, too.
Like with the zoom-in sprite?
Making the sprites bigger to give the illusion of the character being closer to you.
Yeah. They really did make that intimidating.
Yeah. The point at which I was really hooked, the part that was just so effective in getting me scared with so little, was the part in which Keiichi realizes that Rena was watching him through the crack in the door.
I distinctly remember you just saying, oh, fuck, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I will say, for all the anime's disruptions, it hitting the creepy moments does work quite well.
So. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So on that note, do we want to just move right into talking about the adaptations?
Oh, yeah.
I did a lot of research for this, folks.
Yep. And I didn't.
So in my ever pervasive need to be as meticulous and thorough in my research of our material as possible, I not only read the visual novel again, I went to the manga, read the manga, I went to the anime, watched the anime, and then I went back through the visual novel with console sprites. I do not recommend it this way. Just use the console sprites if it's your first time. There are certain things where the console sprites are kind of a detriment, I think. But for the most part, the console sprites without the CG might be the best way to do it.
I would say so far as I am a little bit in the Watanagashi, the second arc, I've only really had one moment where I was displeased with the console sprites or with the CGs. Like the CGs can be a little intense more than needed, but they haven't been too disruptive mostly.
It's just a certain thought process. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm still on the original sprites gang all the way.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the manga. The artist for the manga is Karin Suzuragi. I believe you did a little bit of research into what Karin Suzuragi has done, Jared.
I believe, as I recall looking it over, not only did she do four arcs of the Higurashi series, like Onikakushi and its answer arc, Sumihoroboshi, but she also did the Matsuri Bayashi Hen finale and the Saikoroshi postscript season.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely is someone who does adaptations, because she did adaptation of A Wild Arm along with Ao Oni, and looks like a couple a Danganronpa side project and at least one light novels adaptation. So very much someone who's skilled at that sort of putting words to image.
I want to give you like a little idea of the general pace of the manga here. So the first chapter of any manga is usually going to be an extended pilot type thing.
Usually twice the length, if not more.
Yeah. And chapter one of the manga covers the first three chapters of the visual novel. Like, it's not completely faithful. They skip the picnic and they show a few characters that are kind of hidden from us early on. Like the woman that Keiichi meets on the village tour makes it clear that it's the woman that was with Tomitake at the festival, that kind of thing.
It's the visual setting. It's the same way that you can't hide where Eowyn is in Return of the King that well.
As a weird localization choice, Rika ends sentences with sir for some damn reason. I think they're trying to adapt her saying Nanodesu, but how does that become sir? In what reality does that become sir?
Reality where Rika works with end up being trained by a drill sergeant, I guess.
It's very hard to transliterate those sorts of things. The localization decision is going to be questionable no matter what you do.
Well, I mean, you can just not do it.
Yeah, like, that's.
I mean, verbal tics are so difficult because the way they occupy the spot in language, it's usually better to go for a tonal adaptation.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like, say, here's the style in which they speak rather than pushing in a single unusual tone. Like, you know, Teddy's bear puns.
Oh, gosh, yes. So they keep the original card game that we introduced Keiichi to the club with, and they localize it as Old Geezer rather than our old bachelor from the visual novel. That's probably like more of a play on old maid type thing than anything.
Well, Baba the Gigi is pretty well.
Yeah.
Old bachelor just uses maid with the implication of old maid being married.
Yeah. I think you're right. Chapter 2 of the manga covers chapters 4 through 6 and part of 7 of the visual novel, which...
Bit of a squish mode.
Yeah, that's really fast, because the second chapter of the manga is not as long as the first.
I will say, looking over the art, like, I did a very fast read of a scansellation just so I could look at the images last spots. The artist was a little bit excited to get to the weird faces.
Oh, yes. In order to get that far, it skips Zombie Tag entirely, and we only get an abbreviated version of President, which is localized as Rich Man, Poor Man, which is, I think, the most common name for it. I'm not sure. We get the Watanagashi Five Demon Firefight. Mion's pistol is confirmed to be airsoft, which, thank goodness, she's not packing heat.
They turned the food eating contest like a montage of a couple images. I think they completely skipped the wadded cotton candy that you have to get granular.
Yeah, yeah. They don't go into all the depth that the end does, for sure. Hella, even the cute thing contest is omitted, which, considering the weird innuendo in there, probably thankful. It's speaking of cute, I want to play this clip real quick because it is very strange to me that they localize cute as a doable. A doable. Like
you could have just played this, the music cue.
I know, right?
Yeah.
But yes. It's fine. All I have to say is Rena's adorable corner does not roll off the tongue nearly as well as Rena's cute corner.
I mean, we're going from the Elmira mode to just Elmer Fudd trying to praise things.
Yeah, yeah.
Aw, that's adorable.
I mean, considering that Elmira is supposed to be the Tiny Toons version of Elmer Fudd anyway, that's kind of fitting, but...
Is it? And I'm rather embarrassed how long it took me to realize that Montana Max was a Yosemite Sam name
change. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I got he was one of the villains, but...
It makes sense enough to me because I've seen a lot of kind of, you know, cute characters do the, you know, can't say R's or L's sort of thing.
But and also, like, weird. she's clearly just, like, saying it weird to begin with, to be cute. It needs to be said, like, adorable does not fit the general, like, pace in my mind. Even though it is the same number of syllables as Kai, but...
But it's adding an unusual sound, so you have to force it out, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Kai...
Just kind of pulling a sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Pulling a single sound.
Yeah, adorable is weird. I don't like it as much. Tomitake, in the shooting contest...
Stolen Valor.
Yeah, it gets a bit of Stolen Valor. Like, rather than it's Keiichi's plan to follow up on everything and have everything be, like, everyone's effort together... No, Tomitake gives the idea to Keiichi. I don't like it.
I find everyone's effort together is like, give me three guns. He hands the other two of the arrows. Like, let's take this down. We go firing squad in that damn bear.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
The deduction game is skipped to meet Oishi faster. This moment just made me go, what the hell are we doing here, mangaka? This doesn't make story sense. And I can tell you're just trying to do this for a dramatic cliffhanger moment. But I don't like it. So Oishi reveals Tomitake's death in the fucking entry hall to the school as an enticement to get Keiichi to care.
Hey, kid, why do you hear about this dead person? Don't tell anyone.
Yeah, very loudly. And like,
it's secret.
Like the paneling of it just like makes it the most ominous thing in existence. Like there was no fucking way anyone in school did not fucking hear this.
Not to mention, Oishi's gone to slime face completely.
Oh, yeah.
There are some wonderful shots.
We understand now that Oishi really does suspect Mion and the Sonozakis in general.
Yes.
So there's no way that Oishi would have just handed the knowledge that, oh, we're investigating something and reopening our, and I'm looking into the Sonozakis again.
At the very least, he would not be doing that in a public place.
Within 50 feet of one of them.
Yes. He would totally, like, reveal classified information in a car, as we know. But, yeah, let's just... So, chapter three covers the rest of chapter 7 and chapter 8. It's getting a bit better pace now that we've skipped over all the fun stuff.
They're really big on fisheye close-ups for the creepy scenes and even some non-creepy scenes. Like, as soon as Keiichi's viewpoint becomes suspicious and he starts worrying and things start happening, you get up close. That they really like a version of the slit-eyed evil eyes from similar to the anime.
Mm-hmm.
But they also like really like the characters Giddy and Keiichi's face, having even innocent lines like when Rena's asking if the food was good. Like it's even though it has her own eyes, it's framed terrifyingly. And it's probably one of the more effective ones for that.
I actually rather like the fisheye lens sort of effect because it really accentuates the claustrophobia. And it also accentuates just how deranged everything is.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, there are some things that are just flat out amazing. Like, for Rena shouting, "You're lying," it is a full 2-page spread with 1 page just for the text and 1 page for Rena's face. Like,
and most first I see it, that 1 page is in color.
I think it can be, yeah.
It's like, it's just this snarling blood, it looks like a blood scatter effect over her. She looks like she has fangs, but she doesn't. Just the way they position the mouse, like the teeth are cutting off.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very warped face.
Yep. So chapter 4 covers chapter 9 of the visual novel, which, as you recall, is Keiichi going to the doctor and then getting more information. We get a glimpse of the doctor at the clinic. Not that important, I guess, maybe a little bit important later. It confirms that the name of the family restaurant that they go to is Angel Mort.
And said, and this is where they really start pushing the eyes, like, consistently having Rena friendly and Mion angry looking.
Yeah, Mion and Rena show up without calling ahead. It's a small change to just keep things moving, I guess.
You know, that's small things. Yeah. Though it's funny, they remember where he's censored. He couldn't quite say out loud. Like, they killed him, so they censored Tomotake or something like that.
Yep.
So he imagines all of them with blood on their hands and weapons, so...
Chapter 5 covers Chapter 10 and half of Chapter 11. The only note I had from this one is that Keiji's dad is more convincingly an artist than the manga due to his character design.
Oh my god.
The character design is great.
I argue he's more convincingly a charlatan pretending to be an artist. No artist dresses consistently at home in an open jacket with no shirt and a huge flipped collar, a beret, a gigantic hair spike sticking down between his eyes. An angled beard like he's the monarch.
Yeah. he could not be putting on the airs of being an artist more if he tried.
Unless he was carrying around a wooden pallet everywhere.
Yeah.
Are you sure he doesn't?
Well, we don't see his hands.
I've never seen that. No. Chapter 6 covers the remainder of Chapter 11.
I mean, at this point, they've kind of expanded things so much. Things are going at a much calmer pace. So this is clearly what they prioritize.
That being said, there are some things that it still cuts out that just kind of make me go, what the fuck? Like when Keiichi is talking about dying and about what might happen to him, his parents don't seem to express any concern.
He does kind of dash out of the scene so quickly. I got to say, in Chapter 6, though, Rena appearing at the door is that's the most terrifying cute face ever. Good evening, Keiichi-kun.
One of the interesting things that the manga does is that when Rena's past is being revealed, words with more detail for what is being said are being printed behind words that is being said by her. Like, it's just this interesting effect of you are not hearing the full story here is the general mood I got.
Yeah. So then by Chapter 7, you pretty much get exactly what you think. Like, Chapter 6 did end on the I'm sorry. So 7 is basically just the last segment.
Yep. Yeah. Final chapter covers the whole rest of the thing. There's an interesting thing in the manga. We get a new poem.
Do you know wherein lies the sin? It wasn't in partaking of the fruit of the tree. Do you know wherein lies the sin? It wasn't in lending an ear to the serpent's enticements. Do you still not know wherein lies the sin? Therein lies your sin. Frederica Bernkastel.
I don't want to talk about that poem right now.
Oh, no, because
I want to talk about that poem much, much later, but I don't want to talk about that poem right now. I just wanted to get it in there because, yes, we get a completely original poem in here.
I do kind of like the next thing with like the guys that beat up Keiichi, rather than him chasing down, he walks up to two normal looking guys and they just sock him out of nowhere.
Yeah. Keiichi's blackout in the middle of the violent attack is rendered as two pages of pitch black. Yeah.
Like, after a whole panel of just, like, faces laughing and then one screaming gigantic sound effect, you flip the page, it's just black.
Yeah. It's really chilling. I love how the manga handles it.
He even gets another two pages of, oh, things are normal, it's just a dream. So you flip again, and then you flip it again, and it's a two-page spread.
In the wind-down, it does show Rika and Satoko mourning the deaths of Keiichi, Rena, and Mion. Just a little hint of what is to come, I guess. So I have a few final notes just from my thoughts about it. Like, rushing through Volume 1 and the over-the-top art don't help this much over the anime, in my opinion. I would say a lot of things I still think the VN has a big leg up over the manga. And, like, going into this, my initial thought process was, oh, maybe I can recommend the manga as a way to get into Higurashi if I can't recommend the anime, and I don't think I can justifiably do that right now.
Not even as, like, a secondary recommendation?
It's, I would say, either the anime or the manga. Put the manga and the anime together and you might almost get a decent enough substitute. It still lacks something. Like, it doesn't have some of the internal conflict of Keiichi that the VN puts directly in your face, and so you kind of have less empathy for Keiichi as a result. I like Karin Tsuzuragi when she's drawing the characters in normal mode. I don't like the bestial slit eyes. I think they're overdone. So yeah, that's the manga. Let's talk about the anime. First things first. Let's talk about the thing that the anime gets absolutely right. The opening and ending themes.
talk about using dark chanting for an immediate effect.
The opening theme, I believe it's just called Higurashi no Nakakoromi, is just like this intensely creepy song. Very heavy synth, like vibes the whole way through. It is a fascinating song. That just,
it's like, usually using like synth wub wubs as like distortion. Yeah. This one is just a very bass heavy chanting theme with haunting voices just singing, like, very echoey.
The visuals are pretty fascinating too, since there's lots of like falling flower imagery. It like it sets this mood that like really works for what the anime is going for. The problem is I don't like what the anime is going for.
I mean, it's instantly and immediately excited by the dark things, as it shows things like clearly a representation of Rena breaking her school windows, though for some reason she's barefoot.
Mm-hmm. Like, it'll show, it has Rika looking out from behind a fox mask.
Yeah. Hmm. Characters with enraged faces falling, like, responding, but also, like, falling to their knees and sobbing as well. Destroyed, like, more than one dead insect, of course.
But then the ending, why or why not, is the one time that the anime comes close to the feel that the visual novel gives me.
It's a very elegiac, very sad song.
Yeah.
In painful English, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, painful English is about right.
It's just this quiet song about, like, I've tried to find my way in life. Mm-hmm. Why am I having this pain? And it actually talks about things I can't discuss that are non-spoilers.
Yeah, the opening and the ending are both very good. Now let's talk about how it adapts the visual novel.
Oh boy.
The manga did it in 7 chapters.
Breakneck speed.
The anime does it in 4 episodes of 25 minutes each.
I would argue that's counting at least part of the opening and ending.
Yes. So episode 1 covers the first 3 chapters of the visual novel. Seems okay. That's just how the first chapter of the manga did too. That being said, though, the thing that the manga got right and the anime got wrong here, the opening scene that we went through the narration of on the podcast, all that narration is gone. Yeah. All it shows is Keiichi beating Rena over and over again. That's
slightly shadowed on the bodies, but they're just showing it pretty clearly. Yes.
Yeah. In other words, the opening, rather than focusing on the inner monologue and therefore the inner turmoil of the character and honestly the really sad thoughts that he's having, it just centers violence.
Yeah. Creepy violence scene with eerie music and weird distortions all over it.
Yep. Some things that it skips Keiichi hearing apologies on the car ride home.
I feel like we don't even get the car ride home, or is that my memory?
We do not get it. Like, maybe we get it, I forget. It cuts down a lot of the introduction of the characters, especially Satoko. All of Satoko's, like, prankstery mannerisms are left out.
She doesn't do much of anything, as I recall.
Yeah, she's mostly just rendered as kind of shy, which is not Satoko. One of the notable things about the design, so in the manga, Keiichi looks very much like Shinji Ikari from Evangelion. The anime, less so.
He kind of just has this, you look a little bit too old appearance to it.
Yeah, like.
And does he look as old as, like, say, Jotaro?
No, absolutely not.
No. God, man.
No, absolutely not. He looks like a kid still.
Yeah, just like a 17 or 18-year-old.
I was just laughing because Jotaro is, like, the poster boy for, like, anime teenager who looks like he's 30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was 17, don't forget.
We don't get the tour in town like we got in the manga, but we do get the picnic, which the manga didn't have. Tomoe Take's introduction feels a bit less ominous. Like,
just kind of there.
He's just kind of there, like, Keiichi makes a snarky joke for no good reason, and then just, like, he just sort of, like, narrows his eyes and just kind of bluntly says it without any kind of, like, actual ominousness to it.
Well, a lot of that is, this is the anime, so they could have done a good job with it because they could have used music. But the VN actually does a really good job with silencing the background noise and then using music and sound effects to really make you have a sense of foreboding when Tomoe Take does his
thing. And I like a fair bit of the anime's music. It's just, it never really can think of it as being used in strong ways.
So, yeah, Rena's obsession with cute things is introduced only at the damn site as well.
At the damn site.
First game. Now, this thing is an interesting localization thing. It's localized as Old Maid, even though the Japanese is still saying Gigi Nuki rather than Baba Nuki. It's pretty minor. Keiichi instantly notices the cards are marked. That's just sort of like we're paced for time here. We got to do this quick. Mm-hmm. But because these special rules of the game are localized out, there is one odd moment that makes it almost impossible to understand what's going on if you don't know the original. So Rika says that the odd card is the Jack of Diamonds when the camera focuses on the Jack of Hearts in Keiichi's hand. If you don't know that the rules of Old Bachelor or Old Deezer are one card is removed, then that line makes no sense. And it seems like an animation error, but in fact, it's a localization error. Yeah.
I mean, it almost seems like we're quibbling, but we just want to be really thorough here. Now we skip a bunch of small pace things, but now when we get to the next episode.
Yeah. Episode two. When I got through it, I was just like, how are we doing this? How are we going this fast? Because it goes through from chapters 4 through fucking 8.
I'd argue chapter 4 and 5 don't exist because it cuts their games.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Those chapters are 90% game.
Yeah. It skips all the games and goes straight to Watanagashi.
I don't even think they really push any further the dump site work. So that's just kind of off screen, too.
Yeah. It rushes through the festival. And this is kind of like a key moment is strangely ignored when Tomitake is not included in the club.
Because let's put it directly, Oishi flat out says it's clear that he's come after Keiichi because their names were all over Tomitake's shirt, and he's going after the one he doesn't suspect anything of.
Yeah, if Tomitake is not seen hanging out with the kids at the Watanagashi
or autographed by them.
Yeah, there's no reason for Oishi to come after Keiichi other than, oh, this is the new kid in town. Maybe I can get him to be on my side. But why would you do that with a kid?
And like a lot of these scenes are just rushed through without any tension. Like the woman talking about murders, no tension in that. It's not creepy.
Fast scene. Got to get through it.
Yep. The deduction is sort of truncated. Keiichi doesn't hatch a scheme with Rena. It's just he's just called to Oishi's car with his famous air conditioning.
Except for some of Rena's cute elements and Rika's kind of general being the small kid. You're just not getting any characterization.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say the core problem with the anime is that it only makes you scared of your friends, whereas the visual novel puts in enough effort to make you sad that you're scared of your friends.
Mm-hmm. Very much best way to put it. I mean, Oishi, they go through the details super fast. The anime always goes for shorter conversations, which, well, not unfair. It adds up.
Mm-hmm. It
rushes to get to the Rena conversation.
Yeah, like Rena shouting, that's a lie, is like, it goes on a sprint to get there. It's pretty wild.
This is what starts with the slit eyes, and they just, and I will say their stage here, that's why, where the, like, it focuses on how it disrupts, like, it causes a swarm of bugs and birds to leave a tree behind her.
Yeah.
And kind of the camera focuses, and that's pretty effective, but.
Yeah. Also kind of noteworthy is that Keiichi's dad barely exists and we never see him on camera. Like, when he comes up to deliver tea, like, they're almost treated just like the adults in Peanuts, where they're just always off screen going, rom, 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 rom. Though not really. He still has actual dialogue, but.
And they're really excited to talk about Rena watching him from behind, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so episode 3 covers chapters 9 through 10 and part of 11.
You notice they're saving it all for the wildest moment for a whole episode.
Yes. And so, like, again, Tomitake's connection with all of Keiichi's friends is brought up by Oishi, which is fucking nonsense.
You guys were hanging out with him. No, we weren't.
They weren't. The only time Keiichi ever interacted with Tomitake in the anime was, well, okay, Keiichi interacted with Tomitake.
Twice.
Not all of them. Like, and no one
also
else.
Also only twice, may I add.
Yeah, twice. There's absolutely no fucking reason for Oishi to be talking to Keiichi in the anime. It, like, that is the one thing that just makes me go, do not watch the anime. It leaves out important information that just, like, important connective tissue, really.
And to the point that later on they try to add it back in after the fact. And it's pretty messy on its own. I think that deserves a little discussion at the time.
It will be. I have a plan in mind for some of that.
So now they rush us to the fourth episode where they just kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, is everything to talk about in the third episode? But it's almost just talking about how they just miss everything.
Yeah. Episode 3 might be the worst episode of the anime so far.
The whole clock thing barely comes up.
It's so weird. Like, he never tells his parents about it. Like, how would people know to look behind the clock?
I mean, I guess you look at everything strange in a murderer's room, but.
Yeah, but it still doesn't even give a chance to, like, make his parents feel like actual present characters in the story at all.
In fact, it goes to great lengths to make them not there. I mean, it makes the isolation a little confusing because you don't feel a subtraction, though he still feels isolated.
Yeah. And so then
they go to the Ohagi Mochi instantly.
Yeah. Like, honestly, it went by so fast that I was taking my notes and I just look up and down and up and down. I'm like, wait, we've already passed the Ohagi scene. When did that happen? Episode 4 covers the remainder of the story.
And you can tell they rushed a cliffhanger of the doorbell ringing for 3.
Rena's hands are slammed in the door, but she doesn't seem hurt afterwards. Like, it doesn't focus on it at all.
There's finally enough slowdown that we get chunks of the conversations, but we don't. But it's so thin, and they just really wanted stuff that was creepy.
Yep. Keishi never hears footsteps following him as he's walking along, so he just comes off as paranoid of Rena.
Mion is only in angry mode, like she's not upset at first when Keishi screams at her.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of get the impression that the anime is missing a lot of subtlety that the visual novel has.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would like to say in future Godcast, I think we should be a little bit less in the granulars. Yeah. I'm happy to do it once to say just this is just prevalence.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this specifically
it probably is the most damaged, too.
It is the most damaged arc from what I've seen so far. I have better things to say about Watanagashi's anime. In fact, I think the Watanagashi anime is better than the Watanagashi manga in some cases.
I'm not quite sure the bit about Rena apologizing there. I'm not recognizing that bullet point.
So Rena's questions Keishi about hearing someone apologizing over and over.
Aren't you hearing me?
Yeah, that's what it comes off as in the anime. But in the visual novel and the manga, there is the scene at the beginning of the story of Keiichi hearing a voice apologizing over and over again.
And not to mention his own mental, his own inner monologue starting to be full of random apologies and stress anyway.
Yeah. So it becomes a lot more of a rich line of dialogue than just thinking about me. Like, it centers that line on Rena rather than all of Keiichi's experiences. So, and now there's one notable anime and manga difference here.
Honestly, this is where I talked about how the guys just sock Keiichi out of nowhere in the manga. But also interesting is they're just two guys.
Yeah, in the manga, they are normal ass villagers. In the anime, they are quite clearly the same guys that were in the van that ran Keiichi off the road.
Guys like in khaki work suits wearing caps.
Yeah.
We're inconspicuous. Please look at how inconspicuous we are type guys.
Yeah. Violence is centered again. We don't cut from being pinned to the aftermath. We just get Keiichi beating the girls.
We've kind of blitzed through it. I know the after party can be short here.
Yeah, it's that's just the after party for the new readers. As we're talking about anime, I found myself thinking, if we want to talk about anime, we should probably talk about one of the most influential animes of all time.
We want to talk about someone losing their mind. This is a good time to use that one.
Yeah. So how about it, guys? What do you say? Next week, we're talking about Evangelion.
So that's it for the after party for the new readers. We'll see you next week there.
Yep. So, for all of the readers who are new to When They Cry, I'm Matt.
I'm John.
I'm Jared.
And remember, a good story is best enjoyed with friends.
Thank you for listening to Backlog Dialogues. If you liked our show, please leave us a review that Rena would find cute. If you want to dig into our dark history, you can find our archives at www.backlogdialogues.com. Join the discussion on Twitter at Backlog Dialogues or on our Discord server. When They Cry and all associated properties are owned by 7th Expansion and Manga Gamer. Console versions by Intergram. Please support the official release.
Star Trek Lower Decks decided to make a cute, wadding little creature that drinks bones.
Yep. Rena would absolutely find it cute.
Yeah, even though it's a rapacious carnivore, it attacks everything within it, and they capture it by knocking someone's teeth out, leaving a trail.
Those are all charm points.
Yeah, but it's also while Ron goes, moopsie.
There we go. I figured we'd find a use for this at some point.
Yes.
This is going to be having low.
I know. That's the point.
Yeah.
We're talking over it right now. This is not a serious use of Rena's cute corner. Rena's obsession with... Oh, I just said that. Warning. Spoiler alert. Warning. Spoiler alert. Are the new listeners gone yet?
So for those who aren't new to the story, welcome.
Welcome to the Backlog Dialogues Godcast, the podcast for those who are not human and are unbound from time. Let's talk spoilers.
If I just sometimes see through time, does that count?
Can I leap through time?
Depends. Are you limited to leaping through your own lifetime into other people's bodies, faces that are not your own?
Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
So, in other words, are you Scott Bakula or whoever was in the new season?
I don't know.
So,
I don't remember the actor's name, but it was pretty good.
Yep. So just to be absolutely clear here, we are now doing a bit of talk about Higurashi, knowing the full truth of Higurashi and of Umineko.
Yes.
The way Ryukishi writes, it's only fair to have another discussion once you are fully in the know. Oh, even yeah. Someone like me who hasn't technically finished a visual novel, but still knows a majority of the details of the element.
And I will say, the nice thing about Ryukishi's writing is that it's enjoyable enough that when you go back and read again, even knowing the full story, like, there's still plenty of stuff to find and take interest in.
So, yeah, let's...
There's a ton of things to go back and watch for. And it's really, really interesting to actually see how many hints there were that you blew through.
Oh, yeah. So, on that note, let's talk about Keiichi.
Let's talk about Keiichi, the story of a young man being driven mad by his own paranoia, even as he thinks he might be.
Yeah.
Frankly, the narration is upfront about this. He spends time convinced that he must be imagining things, and quite unfortunately, he is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a ton of hints about all of these things, and of course, Keiichi is an unreliable narrator. There's no two ways about it.
And frankly, the story is good. This, other than Oishi filling his head full of scary stories, and Tomotake and Takano doing as well, though that's ostensibly more fun. Everything Keiichi comes up with is conclusions in his own head.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the key here.
Yes.
And the interesting thing about it is that pretty much everything that Keiichi is finding threatening here is mostly him interpreting very normal things as very sinister. Just like a lot of it is just, oh, well, Mion said this, but she had this look on her face that made me really scared. And, you know, it's just how Keiichi saw it rather than her saying something that is completely out beyond the pale.
I feel like there's a lot of discussion about the value of the hallucinations of Hinamizawa syndrome. Mm-hmm. But in this story, it's very clear that his perceptions are so warped that he's coming to mad conclusions. Like he felt pain from biting into something spicy, and he has had this whole mental image of finding like blood and a needle.
Yeah.
And because of that, and because his friends just know about a prank they made, everything he says, and they ask innocently about a story, it's just reinforcing this because he can't say anything out loud. He won't talk to anyone because he refuses.
Yeah, it is a scary story your first time through. It is a deeply sad story your second time through.
But it's also very scary the second time.
Oh, yeah.
You're watching a person under his own stress with relatively low trigger factors going into a whipping himself up into a delusional frenzy.
Do we want to talk about all of the various explanations for the Keiichi's friends doing what they did?
I mean, we can discuss the main ones, like just we can talk about the two or three biggest ones here.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like when we hit part six, we can go into more details. I think it really hits on that.
Mm-hmm.
But just, it's worth noting that Keiichi is repeatedly interpreting relatively normal or serious dialogue and also innocuous little pranks as things incredibly threatening. Like his fight or flight instinct is ratcheted up to 11 and won't drop.
Yeah.
Like his friends get sad and talk seriously to him. He sees it as them becoming angry and cold and threatening.
Yeah. And we do explicitly get a lot of narration along that sense that Keiichi is keeping himself at the maximum level of alertness and winding himself up for more than a day, and anybody will break under the stress.
I'd argue probably 3.5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like which chapter is the original Rena conversation? Like chapter what, 7?
8.
So yeah, that's 3 days plus another half day, and that's after several days worrying. So once he gets triggered into this fear mode, it really is that long a time frame. So mm-hmm. He unable to sleep. He worries himself sick the first day. Basically, at that point, he just fractures under stress. You almost don't need the plot device, but it's there to to make the hallucinations more explicit.
Well, and also very specifically, there are some hallucinations in the anime and manga that do imply the more spiritual aspects of Hinamizawa syndrome, specifically the things that Keiichi is hearing.
Everything involving footsteps.
Yep.
Yeah, the footsteps and the invisible presence are of course, Keiichi detecting Hanyu. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Our good horn girl, whose idea of how to make things up to people, you think she'd notice after the first dozen times it's making things worse, but she's kind of stuck in her ways.
Yeah. She's a very traditional goddess.
Yes. I mean, like, but to go into what really happens, I think the easiest way is we talk about this, the tragedy, which is Rena's view. Let's see if I can make a narration out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Rena, who we know moved back into her hometown after a year ago, she meets a new friend. She clearly crushes him a little because he's an older boy. He's smart. He's sophisticated. He teases her, but she's okay with that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly one day he just withdraws.
Yeah.
Like, he starts getting nervous. He starts asking her weird questions, asking about, like, if everyone's hiding from her, if everyone's lying to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she does not respond. And when she tries to talk to him seriously, he seems even more freaked out and he runs away.
Not only that, like, he starts lying to her about what things, too. It's just like,
yeah, he's disappearing. He's talking to the police. That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, also keep in mind that this happened last year with another boy that she kind of liked as well.
No,
we're not even that far.
She liked Satoshi, like, but yeah.
She valued him as a friend, I think.
She valued Satoshi as a friend. It was Shion that specifically really liked Satoshi.
So, yeah, a year ago, a friend who was suffering, who Mion and with her were trying to, like, just make things a safe space in the school, that friend suddenly vanished after more horrible stuff happened.
Yeah.
So she gets Mion, the two of them visit him. He kind of glares them down and seems freaked out when they ask him what he's been up to all afternoon because he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she made him food and they put a little prank in it because it's fun, you know?
Yeah. Like, and again, like, they have that whole mentality of, hey, we are friends that joke around.
Yeah.
Obviously, this little prank will be fun for you.
The next day, he smiles for a second, but as soon as she asks about the food, he kind of just locks down and won't look at her.
Yeah.
Makes weird statements there, and then he completely avoids staying at club with them for the first time.
Starts swinging a bat around.
And he just starts getting really cryptic. Like, the next day when she starts swinging a bat, she follows him because she's seen this before. It scares her. And he basically starts screaming at her. He doesn't let her near him. She says, walk in front of me so I can watch you.
Yeah.
And then, like, when she finally just like, you're doing something that's scary and someone else did that, why are you doing that? He kind of just looks like he shit his pants and runs off again.
Then the next day, Keiichi's parents call and ask her to look after Keiichi and make dinner for him.
That's the big thing. That's the big thing.
He doesn't know how to cook. You cook good and we're kind of shipping you with him because, let's be honest, we're parents.
And, like, again, like, that's the key thing here. The one thing that makes it so painfully obvious how tragic this is, like, the reason Rena is there at the door to give Keiichi food, that she knows that he's not home, is because Keiichi's mom fucking called her and said, hey, go and help my kid out.
And he's definitely still stressed, still worried. She doesn't know what's going on, but he's definitely upset.
Like,
I mean, let's go all out. Let's make him a really nice dinner. He loved that, the picnic. Let's eat and talk.
Yeah.
She thinks it's a chance to make up with him, to fix everything.
She doesn't know what's going on, but she's worried. He refuses to open the door, repeatedly lies to her. She can't understand why. It's ridiculous. He's obviously home alone. And she just, like, impulsively reaches through, like, maybe just, like, take his hands, like, look, let's talk. And he slams that fucking door on her fingers as hard as he can.
Yeah. And, like,
that's horrifying.
It is totally understandable to have her just be, like, outside, like, apologizing over and over again because she's traumatized by this at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Ren is smarter than she acts, and that's fine. She likes the way she behaves, but she definitely is very sensitive emotionally.
Yeah.
Like, as much intelligence she has, she's very sensitive to things targeted against her. So she cannot comprehend this other than, I did something wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I broke and something happened, and Shiro-san was mad at me. My parents were mad at me. I must have done it again. I just have to apologize.
Well, I just wanted to point out that one of the really cool things about Higurashi as a story is that I didn't realize that Keiichi's mom and dad must have called Rena for a while. But later in one of the later chapters, that happens and we see it on screen, but it's not made a big deal out of.
And apparently Rena regularly shops with Keiichi's mom too. So yeah, that's yeah. like they, you know, they're social.
Yeah, they're friends.
Rena's
yeah.
a sweet girl. Rena's a sweet girl who gets along with Keiichi. Keiichi's mom always seems to want to socialize him, but she's kind of worried about some of his habits. That's yeah. talking mm-hmm. later. Yeah. So then on the last day, like, he won't look at her. He won't talk to her. She tells a lie about how she's hurt. She's only him in trouble, but he's just back out there swinging the bat. He makes Mion cry and grabs her by her shirt. I wonder if she saw that.
And when she tries to talk to him after school, he just runs away.
I think she's desperate because she now yeah. she won't leave him be. Like, he's running. He's screaming. He's saying she has an axe. I don't know if she's carrying something. I don't know if that's questioned there, but I think she's trying to be cheerful. It's like she's trying to be comforting, calm, trying to like giggle and mm-hmm. just say her. And he's just he runs halfway throughout the town.
There was a really big dissonance between what Rena was trying to say and how Keiichi was taking it.
I mean, and Oyashiro-sama is important to her. So if he brings it up, she probably tries to explain, yes, I believe in it, and that's important. And then he's just even more terrified. He just runs away. And this part, we presume, I just still presume a pair of townspeople saw this yeah. guy knock a girl to the ground while screaming, and they just grabbed this crazed kid.
That's the most interesting thing to me here.
I think the anime made assumptions. Was Kai out when was the answer arcs out when the first anime was created?
Up through Sumihoro Roboshi was out because they were adapting Sumihoro Roboshi as well.
Oh, true. That makes sense.
But I think very specifically, like, Keiichi in the narration thinks that they are the people that attacked him earlier, that the people in the van show up, and he thinks the people that were in the van were the same people that jumped him earlier.
Which is, like I said, but he's assuming he's seeing people. And even if that van was what almost hit him, it's still, like I said,
nah.
that could be anything. Like, he literally could have been walking dangerously in traffic. It was yeah. just a horrible accident.
Nah. One interesting thing about that is that in the visual novel, you can get away with that sort of thing because yeah. the narrator doesn't mention things that the narrator does not think are important.
I will say the two guys are not at all described.
Yeah. In the manga and the anime, however, the viewer can actually see details that the narrator may not have noticed.
So, and that's the thing that's interesting to me about this, because I think that the manga is visually reliable here, but either the anime got it wrong or is showing Keiichi's hallucination in that moment.
And his hallucinations, even recognizing things minor. So
yeah,
it's every reason to believe these two guys were grabbing a panicking 15-year-old. Maybe they even knocked him out because they're holding him like in the accidental chokehold. But
yeah,
Rena must have come. It's like, don't hurt him. I think he's just upset. I'm going to take him home. I'm going to call a doctor.
And so she tells a little white lie of, I didn't see any guys out there, because that would just freak out Keiichi yeah, more.
Keiichi's clearly upset and scared. He's claiming people are after him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She calls the doctor. They know that she calls the coach. She calls Mion over.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to just be comforted. Like, there's something wrong with him.
They're trying to play with him, get him to smile.
And yeah, then
it's like, look, it's a moment. And then they pull out a marker because, you know, he said he missed a game.
Because what did they do to Tomitake? They wrote on his shirt.
And God, the anime ignored that completely. So when in Sumo Roboshi, they actually show it being the marker and they drew good luck on his arm or something.
Yeah.
Well, it's theoretically innocent. It makes the what happened to Tomitake a very weird threat. Rather yes. than just saying, like, you understand, you're going to have the same punishment.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and then before he knows, he turns and lunges at them and that's it.
And he saw the marker as a syringe in his mania.
The probably the most explicit of the hallucinations, because even the eyes, though they're drawn different, the narration describes them as just like a percent of how the eyes looked.
I didn't realize for a long time that those were, in fact, hallucinations, but I thought that the narration for things like the needle and the syringe were very strange, and it seemed like Keiichi was having to convince himself that he was experiencing what he was really experiencing.
It looks like that. It seems like that. It's almost like part of his mind is struggling with the other until the image locks in.
Yeah.
I actually find myself, this is going to be a silly reference. Stephen King's It, there's a couple of sequences where the monster bursts out in front of several of the kids, and they describe it as a whirling kaleidoscope of images until one of their fears, like one of them shouts out what they see, and then it locks in the fear for all of them, and it takes that shape.
Ah,
and it's almost like his mind is going through that. It's like, what is it? Is that neat? Is it, like, no, that hurts. Like, what's in my mouth? A metallic taste. Like, is that blood? Oh, is that? It's a needle. And it's like his brain worked to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
it's just, it's brutal. Like I said, I hope that rundown of Rena's stories is, this is one of the saddest tragedies you'd see. You could, you could almost make an arc out of just that side of it. And it would be a complete sob story.
You know how every Ace Attorney story has that rethink everything moment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the weakness of Ace Attorney stories is that they lead you by the nose to that rethink everything moment. What I really love about When They Cry is that you have a lot of those rethink everything moments, but they're all organic. You're never led to the nose to any of them. All of the moves that explain the perfectly reasonable explanation for why all of these things happen are shown to you on screen before the answer is spelled out to you. Mm-hmm. It's just that up to you to figure out the context. And even if you miss a few of them, there's still a ton of them that absolutely blew my mind when I realized, oh, this is something that I can use to completely recontextualize everything that came before. And then it happens again and again and again, further than I ever imagined it would.
As I said, my first reaction to Higurashi was I viewed it as a horror story rather than a mystery story. And the thought of treating it as a mystery even did not come up until, I want to say, halfway through the anime, maybe later. And I still probably wasn't, like, ready to call it a mystery ever. Treating it like the way the visual novel treats it, where it does have that, like, organic reveal thing, feels a lot better.
And I want to say, talking about Matt is surprised with the narrative, I distinctly remember during the anime, I actually had to ask John and Sumeroboshi when he has her moments, like, wait, what is that saying happened? Like, I didn't understand it. Because, like, you get, like, 30 seconds of flashback, one crossfade of a syringe to a marker, and then him freaking out about what happened. Like, I literally needed to use, like, John, like, did he say that he imagined it? I couldn't process it. The anime wasn't any good at it.
So. And, yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I was just like, I think so? Something like that. But, yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah.
I totally respect people that are like, you can enjoy Higurashi just by watching the anime, because I enjoyed Higurashi by watching the anime at first.
It's a pretty good horror story, but the other part of the story is very confusing.
And that's why I, on good conscience, cannot recommend the anime.
The visual novel is just so much more psychological. It gets into your head.
Okay, so the first time I'm going through the visual novel, I find myself kind of like wanting it to get to the point. I don't want it to do all these fun game things.
I will say, while my housemate still is only partway through, he started with some impatience because after the first scene, but then he started getting drawn in. I believe we're just kind of at the start of Millionaire right now still, but...
Okay.
Even if you're not that big into the slice of life stuff, it really needs it so that you build up the characterization and a connection to the characters.
Yes.
It doesn't hit very hard if, you know, you're just... You just know Rena as, oh, this is the girl that Keiichi hangs out with, and you don't have, like, a reason to be invested in her.
Satoko, watching the anime, you would have no reason to believe that Satoko is a little prankster at all in the first arc.
And I believe in, like, by the third part, she just kind of starts being one. It just makes, like, a higher hostility level, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Mion's characterization is kind of there in the VN or in the anime at the beginning. Rika just kind of like, oh, here's a cute little girl. I don't know.
Mion, they go with the simplest version, basically what her appearance suggests about her characterization.
Yeah, like, and it, I don't want to harp on it for too much longer. We'll probably talk about it less in the future Godcasts. Maybe there will still be some times where I feel like I have to say something. For the most part, I think the biggest takeaway I want to have here is just like, I like these scenes of the club going through club activities so much more on rereads because, like, it's just fun. You need fun moments in stuff like this.
And because I understood what was coming, I even said to John around chapter 4, I dread this. I dread the good times ending here because this is enjoyable. I dread watching the horror to come. And because I now understood the characters more, it was even just more so painful.
Yeah, there's a lot of places where Keiichi voices that himself. He doesn't want these days to end. He'd do anything to keep them going.
But because he cannot stop doubting everyone, and I think that's actually the end, he puts, I can't stop doubting everyone during his realization later. And that's very much what happens. His fear is so strong that he can't bring himself to believe it. He can't bring himself to let his friend in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of this is all of this is about paranoia and seeing patterns that aren't there and how that destroys trust in other people.
Paranoia and pareidolia.
I really just was blown away when I first read this whole thing for entirely different reasons that I'm blown away by it on reread. It's such a good story that you can go back and have a different experience rereading it.
I think it's important that we continue to talk things from these angles, and it's going to be more important as the shows go on.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to really quick talk about how the club games are actually microcosms of the themes that are coming or foreshadowing?
I just want to touch on the one that matters for this one.
Sure.
Keiichi loses because he suspects his friend, an old bachelor. But she trusted him. She beat him because she trusted
him. Oh, fuck. That she knew what he would do. So good. That's really good.
There's more to go on, but I just want to touch this. Like, if you had just impulsively accepted everything, you would have been okay. If you had just trusted, you would have been okay.
You got stuck in your head and...
Ignoring all the amusing Kaiji, Emperor and Slave game elements there, it's still hilarious for that.
Yeah, the games are all just like extremely loaded with themes and foreshadowing and elements that are just kind of like... When you go back through them, you just pick up on it. You're just like, Ryukishi, you asshole. I love it.
I think that's most of what we want to talk about here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a good amount. I'm glad we're able to get this much out of the Godcast.
For those who have partaken in Blackest of Tea, we'll see you next time.
Yes. So until next time, I'm John.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Matt.
And remember, a good story is best enjoyed with your fellow monsters. At Angel Mort for some reason.
Well, have we even heard the name of this yet?
A name yet?
At the Weird Diner for some reason.
You do a much better evil laugh than me. I'm just gonna say, you guys do better evil laughs than me.
I wonder if that's saying something.
Yes.